Good evening, Truth Seekers.
Friday, my day to play.
Hey, for most of us, it's just another work day, right? A mass shooting in Dothan, Alabama last night. You hear about that? Huh? Police have charged a 22-year-old man from Enterprise, Alabama, with capital murder for shooting to death three people, wounding another at a strip club near Dothan, Alabama. Ryan Clark Peterson faces three counts of capital murder for the killing of an employee, the club owner's son, and a customer. Well, didn't even make the news, did it? Huh? Who knows from Dothan, Alabama, right? Dothan what? Handgun. You know, it's not just the evangelical Christians that are nuts. The ultra-Orthodox Jews are just as insane. This story comes from Israel, Jerusalem. The ultra-Orthodox Jewish men there are terrified of women. So they have separated the sexes on buses, sidewalks, other public spaces in the various neighborhoods. And the reason for it, of course, their interpretation of Jewish law forbids contact between men and women who are not married. Now, you know, I could just as easily change this from ultra-Orthodox Jew to rabid Muslim. It works either way. There are walls in the neighborhoods that I'm talking about here in Jerusalem that have signs demanding that women wear closed-necked, long-sleeve blouses and long skirts. And if you are an ultra-Orthodox man and you see a woman who's dressed in a way that offends you, then you can go up to her and start beating her. And, you know, the reason I brought this up is because we always hear about the Islamic justice. The Muslims will do this. Oh, my God, she was driving a car! 80 lashes! Well, the ultra-Orthodox Jews, same thing. Now they're trying to keep them out of sight altogether. Did you hear about this? This is in New York Daily News. The ultra-Orthodox Jewish community's unofficial modesty patrols. Doesn't this sound like something from Saudi Arabia? It's exactly the same. Exactly. I forget what they call them in Saudi Arabia. But in these neighborhoods in Jerusalem, they're called modesty patrols. Now, they are selling eyeglasses with special blur-inducing stickers on their lenses. This is not from The Onion. This is from the New York Daily News. The glasses provide clear vision for up to a few meters so as not to impede these ultra-Orthodox Jewish men as they walk down the street. But anything beyond that gets blurry, including women. So they're selling glasses that blur their vision so they don't have to see women they consider to be immodestly dressed. For men who do venture outside their crazy little Orthodox communities, they use hoods and shields that block peripheral vision. Although those are being offered now. If you have to leave your neighborhood and you're an Orthodox Jewish man, God forbid you should see a woman! So you know those blinders on horses? You know what I'm talking about? They're selling those now to these ultra-Orthodox Jews so they don't have to see a woman. Now, okay, that's fine. Go ahead and do that, you psycho jack-legged freaks. At least they're not... You know, they're not putting even more pressure on Jewish women. I mean, they can't worship together. They can't eat together. They can't ride buses together. They can't walk together. God forbid they go to a beach together. None of that. No. Why? Because women are unclean. And if an ultra-Orthodox Jewish man sees a woman, why, he might, you know, just like an ultra-Orthodox, I know, bad term, Islamic person. Oh, my God, cover her up. Put her in a grill cover. I can't look. Why can't you look? It's just a woman. I might rape her. What? You might what? The R word. The glasses sell for $6 a pair. Boy, the Abrahamic religions are sick, sick, sick. And we have reached a point in human history where they are being unleashed. Did you hear about the Pussy Band in Moscow, the one that offended Putin? Did you hear about that? That's the name of them. I'm just quoting the name. It was a pussy riot. It's the name of the band, Kathy. Kathy's sitting here going, Now, hold on. They went inside an Orthodox church. Oh, here it is. Yeah, punk band. The band is called... Where the hell is the name of it? Anyway, here's the story. In the Cathedral of Christ the Savior, members of three Russian Orthodox groups that scream this blend of Russian nationalism and religiosity set fire 2 days ago to a poster of the feminist punk band Pussy Riot and also put a match to a poster of the pop star Madonna. Leonid Simonovich, the white-bearded leader of one group, which is called the Union of Orthodox Banner Bearers, said, "We're going to rip them up and burn them like in the Middle Ages." Well, you didn't have posters in the Middle Ages. Well, maybe you did, but I think he's referring to the members of Pussy Riot, the three girls. They belong to, they're in this band. They've been in jail since March. And they are on trial for that old Russian standby, hooliganism. Because what they did, they staged an anti-Putin performance inside Christ the Savior Cathedral. And on Tuesday night, Madonna, who is also in Moscow, used her concert to urge their release. Now, you would think that this is politically motivated. It is not. It is from the Russian Orthodox Church. And what has developed, you know, during the bad old days of Soviet communism, the church was consigned to the basement, if not the ash heap of history. Well, with Putin, who knows how to use and how to manipulate, just like the right wingers in this country know how to manipulate the American brand of Christianity, Putin and the Politburo know how to, or whatever it's called now, they know how to manipulate Russian Orthodox Christianity, which is as crazed, crazier than the Christianity in this country. So these three young women now, they're facing some serious time. They have been accused of committing moral harm, engaging in Satanism, and inciting religious hatred. What? The only religious hatred is directed at them. But it's not just here. It's not just here. The three women have apologized, saying that they never intended to offend the church, and that their punk prayer, is what they called the music they performed in February, was intended as political criticism of Vlad Putin, who was then running for president, and Patriarch Kirill I for supporting Putin. They don't have separation of church and state in that sucked up country anymore. But when you say your prayers tonight, a few words for Pussy Riot, okay? Back in the USSR. Been away so long, I hardly knew the place. Gee, it's good to be back home.
in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the U.S.S.R.
To the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart. Grass on the show, don't catch your money's worth. We're the show, it had my power on the Oxy show.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, back to Pussy Riot for just a moment. These three musicians who are in a Russian jail because of their political satire and their religious, the venue in which they perform their political satire and satire on this crazed patriarch, Kirill the First, who is the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. Oh, my God. They're being charged with hooliganism, but they are accused of committing moral harm, engaging in Satanism, and inciting religious hatred. In questions from the lawyers, this was reported in the Times, I think, yesterday, in questions from the lawyers and in the testimony from victims, you know, people who saw this band, feminism has been described as a sin, and the patriarch, this head of this Russian church, the patriarch has been described as a religious figure with greater rights than ordinary citizens. The Orthodox Church and its crazy Christianity have also been portrayed as virtually synonymous with Russian national identity. One victim, quote-quote, Pavel Zelyezov, who works as an altar server in the cathedral, urged a tough sentence on the three young women, saying it was needed to, quote, defend the interests of all believing Orthodox Christians. He went on to say, our God-loving forefathers who built churches and monasteries did not do this just for prayer. They put in their spiritual foundation so that the Russian people, we and you, have immunity, so that we could stand, fight with our external enemies, our internal enemies. Oh, well, that's what it's all about, huh? Now, every evangelical Christian in the United States who read this story was just salivating about, oh, my God, we want that here. We want that here! Pussy Riot! Oh, no! Oh, no! They were mocking the head of the church and mocking the head of state. Oh, no. Oh, no. A spokesman said that Patriarch Kirill will comment at the end of the trial. The defendants were allowed to make final statements day before yesterday, and the judge said she would issue her verdict on August 17th. The defendants, who have seemed exhausted at times during the trial, appeared heartened by Madonna's support from the stage of her concert the other night. One of the young women, Nadizhda Tolonikova, told the judge that she believed even many church members had changed their minds. She said, quote, I know that many Orthodox Christians support us now. In fact, they pray for us. Madonna had a performance yesterday. She performed with a Pussy Riot sign on her back. More and more people are seeing that we are being held illegally and under completely false accusation. End quote. Now, back to Mr. Simonovich Nikshikshim. Now, this guy, Simonovich Mikshikshimishish, he's the leader of the group, the Union of Orthodox Banner Bearers. I'm sorry. This is just goddamn insane. He described the poster burning as an exorcism, which he and his colleagues repeated when a second television crew arrived, wearing their trademark T-shirts with the slogan, Orthodoxy or Death. How about that? Orthodoxy or Death. Does that sound faintly Muslim? Does that sound faintly Orthodox Jewish? Does that sound faintly Christian evangelical? Eh? Orthodoxy or death. Either accept Jesus on our basis or your ass is going to burn forever. You notice the similarities here. Anyway, this group, under the direction of Simonovich Nikshish, they carried a large cross, also enchanted a prayer. Igor Miroshnichenko, an artist and fashion designer who designed the T-shirts, trampled on the ashes of the band's poster. He said, "I am crushing them with my Russian boots!"
You can't measure anymore.
Story from Russia, the punk band's trial. I mean, it's just madness. It's not just here. This fundamentalism that, especially in the three Abrahamic religions and all their offshoots, is just determined to destroy the planet, destroy everybody. They're making a very strong case for atheism, or at least agnosticism. But to conclude this group called the Banner Bearers, this ultra-right-wing group who is all about defending the right of the Russian Orthodox Church to maintain primacy over other citizens. If you are a leader in the Russian Orthodox Church, you have more rights than if you are just an average Russian, regardless of your religious belief or lack thereof. But the Times says, while the banner bearers and their allies may appear cartoonish, visually they seem combination of the Grateful Dead and the Ku Klux Klan, they say, and here it comes, they say they are fighting for the survival of Russia against a liberal onslaught from within the country and from outside the country, especially from the West. One of their biggest battles has been fighting against gay rights. So you see the connective tissue between Islamists, Christians, Orthodox Jews. One of the primary links is the absolute determination to destroy people who happen not to be heterosexual. After burning the posters, Mr. Miroshnichenko, the artist, and Ivan Otrakovsky, a Marine from the Chechen War. Oh, that's real nice. Sipped tea at Red October, a hipster hangout across the street from the cathedral. While Mr. Simonovich took part in a televised anti-gay rights roundtable, Mr. Otrakovsky, who disagrees with the Bundestag in Germany, says, free Pussy Riot. Mr. Ostrovsky doesn't agree with that. He says, what if we say to the Bundestag, stop letting gays march around? The Reverend Sergei Rybko, a Moscow priest who, like many of the activists, came to Russian Orthodoxy through rock music and the Soviet-era anti-government movement, said that at first he had pitied the young defendants, Pussy Riot, but that he changed his mind after learning more about them. He said, they have no shame, no conscience. Okay. What an intriguing story, huh? Putin is on the record now as saying he hopes the court isn't too severe with him. Got an email from Alice in Arkansas today. She writes, Mike, I have recently been meandering into Stalinist Russia, first via a book by Adam Hochschild entitled The Unquiet Ghost, Russians Remember Stalin. From there, I was led to a couple of memoirs by a couple of Russian women who were survivors of the Stalin purges. The book I'm reading currently is called Hope Against Hope by Nadzhda Mandelstam, the widow of Osip Mandelstam. Osip Mandelstam has been called Russia's greatest poet of the 20th century. He died in transit on his way to a slave labor camp in Siberia in 1938. Here's what he wrote. Oh, and this is under the subject line, Why We Should All Scream. Here's what the poet wrote. So that's the background. While reading last evening, I was struck by the following... Alice says that's the background. And she says, so while reading last evening, I was struck by the following passage and understand why you scream and why we all should be screaming. Here's the passage. Later, I often wondered whether it is right to scream when you are being beaten and trampled underfoot. Isn't it better to face one's tormentors in a stance of satanic pride, answering them with contemptuous silence? I decided that it is better to scream. This pitiful sound, which sometimes, goodness knows how, reaches into the remotest prison cell, is a concentrated expression of the last vestige of human dignity. It is a man's way of leaving a trace, of telling people how he lived and died. By his screams, he asserts his right to live. He sends a message to the outside world demanding help and calling for resistance. If nothing else is left, one must scream. Silence is the real crime against humanity. So, Alice writes, please, scream on. Thank you, Alice. Presumptive Republican presidential nominee Mitt Romney mistakenly mixed the word seek and shake during a fundraiser in Iowa recently, a couple of days ago. I realize there's two ways to pronounce seek. I pronounce it seek rather than sick. During an evening fundraising event in West Des Moines Tuesday, Romney was offering condolences to the victims of the weekend massacre at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin when he talked about a Sheikh temple and the Sheikh people. Sikhism is a religion with roots in South Asia, while Sheikh or Sheikh is an honorific term in Arabia. Romney spokesman Rick Gorka, which is a honorific term in Slabovia. Gorka said the candidate, quote, mispronounced similar sounding words, pointing out that Romney was obviously referring to the Wisconsin shooting. Gorka also said the mispronunciation came at the end of a long day of campaigning. Romney had traveled to three states, participated in three events, and taped an interview before giving or before arriving at West Des Moines. So Romney spokesman Rick Gorka says it was all a mistake, that Mitt Romney obviously knows the difference between Sikhs and Sheikhs. Okay. Isn't it crazy? Isn't it just insane? Huh? Oh, by the way, Real Clear Politics poll shows Obama with a 4.4 percentage point lead over Romney nationwide, while a Reuters Ipsos poll shows a 7-point lead for Obama. Conservatives of late have seen Romney as weak. Did you hear about this dump Romney movement? In an August 10th opinion piece, The Wall Street Journal, Peggy Noonan, who is identified so often as a conservative doyenne. How would you like to be called a doyenne? She said, quote, I suspect some conservatives used the Romney campaign's listless response as a stand-in for what they'd really like to say to Mr. Romney himself, which is, wake up, get mad, be human, we're fighting for our country here. Romney believes, or Noonan believes, Romney overmanages and second-guesses himself. She wrote on in her Wall Street Journal op-ed piece, up to a certain point, that's good. Self-possession is a necessary quality in a political leader, but people don't choose a leader based solely on his ability to moderate himself. Blah, 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 blah. Social conservatives, you see, are worried that Romney is really a sheep in wolf's clothing. A sheep in wolf's clothing. That's what they think he may be. So there is a move afoot. This was in the International Business Times. A conservative group says a Romney nomination is Obama's reelection, so they're trying to figure out a way to dump him before the Republican National Convention. they're trying to get it started, where delegates who at this point are pledged to Romney will drop him either prior to or during the Republican convention. This is why I am just so excited, is the right word, about the fact that Governor Rick Scott in Florida has granted permission for people to carry guns into the Republican National Committee or a National Convention. Oh, this is going to be so interesting.
And for all the little piggies, life is getting worse. Always having dirt to play around in. Have you seen the bigger piggies in the starched white shirts? You will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean shirts to play.
Each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Ten before the hour. So, this attempt now is starting to gain steam to get rid of Mitt Romney as the head of the Republican ticket. There are there is a group of ultra-conservative neo-Nazi, and neo-fascists, I should say, Republicans, who are insisting that Romney accept Wisconsin Governor Ryan, is it Paul Ryan, as his running mate. Now, the problem here is that, in a sense, Romney is a sheep in wolf's clothing. He really is. He governed Massachusetts when he governed from kind of a center-right and sometimes center position on some certain social issues. He was very much the centrist. The only reason he's gone hard right is to get the nomination. And I think most of the hardcore right-wing operatives understand that. You also have the evangelical crowd who really, really do see Mitt Romney, at least their leaders do, as a bishop in a satanic cult. See, all these different religions, I've said this before, they all eventually want to kill each other. Representative Paul Ryan, I'm sorry. Excuse me, the one that came up with the... I'm thinking of Walker. Paul Ryan, the Congress member who came up with the budget idea. Right, budget committee chair. Thanks, Kathy. So anyway, this group is called Jews and Christians Together. And I swear to God, Jews and Christians Together. It has begun sending memos to Tampa delegates urging them to choose someone else to replace Romney. Now, the convention is the week of August 27th, and there's a group behind the Dump Romney nominee, you get it? Dump Romney push, and it's urging delegates to not give Romney the nod, and it hasn't recommended a candidate as a replacement. Steve Baldwin, political consultant, former California state legislator, is the driving force behind the group. He was also the executive director of some little circle jerk called the Council for National Policy, a networking group for social conservative activists. That means religious Nazis. Roughly 20,000 people in media and politics reportedly got the memo that's being sent around to dump Romney. Baldwin made it clear in a telephone interview on Friday today that he's not against Romney's Mormonism. But that he believes Mormonism is, quote, easily exploitable by Barack's surrogates, end quote. The group also believes that Romney's, quote, odd, bizarre beliefs are very different, end quote, and are, quote, likely to bite the GOP hard, end quote. Jews and Christians Together also believes that Romney's nomination will result in Obama's reelection. It also believes that what they are referring to as totally unbound GOP delegates have the right to dump Romney. I mean, it's a... Oh, my God. Some polls are showing Obama with a widening lead over Romney. The latest Fox News poll, that's the one run by the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization, shows Obama with a 9-point lead over Romney. That's an increase of 5 percentage points from last month. So the effort is on now, and I love this. Listen, all you Republicans are going to the... convention in Tampa, take your weapons. I want to see some of you people walking in there with the multiple round clips, you know, 40, 50 rounds. You can get these. Your Glock 9 will be able to take probably 50, 60 round clips. So I want all you people to go in there heavily armed because, there might be some liberals in there. You never know. But go heavily armed. This is what you people have always wanted. This is what you've worked for. This is what the governor of Florida and the NRA is encouraging, or are encouraging, all of you. And you women, don't hold back just because the boys are going in armed. I want all you Republican women, tuck one in your girdle, and preferably a semi-automatic. Some of you are so interestingly shaped that you could get one into the convention center there, tucked between your legs, I'm sure. Just I think it might be good to take an AR-15. That's a good weapon. Some of you will be stuck with, you know, stupid-ass 30-06s or 30-30s. Well, okay, in a pinch. But I want everybody armed that's going in the Republican convention, because Romney's people are going to be armed. You can bet your ass on that. These are Mormons. They will be fully armed. And when the attempt is made to deny Romney what has been purchased for him, legally and right up front by Adelson and the rest of these freaks, when an attempt is made to take from Romney what he bought fairly and squarely, there might be some gunplay. One can hope, because that's how we settle things in this country. I mean, wasn't it wasn't it Moses, Charlton Heston, who said something about until they pry it from my cold, dead hands? Well, not that it's cold in Tampa. It may be cold inside the convention center there, but just remember, well-armed, an armed populace is an alert convention. So everybody, all you Republicans, get your guns! Let's go! God damn it, we got to get rid of Romney here! We got to replace him with a real conservative! And, of course, we'll try to do it peacefully. We'll try. More items here. Oh, by the way, at the bottom of this hour, we will be doing podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy podcast downloads, absolutely free, commercial free also. The retail value of what? $56.40 or $54.60 or something? $59.40. Works out to 25 cents a program, hence it's a two-bit radio show. But you can... you can win just by calling in at the appropriate time and getting the right answer to the multiple choice question. The actively Nazi organization, formerly known as Blackwater Worldwide, has agreed to pay a $7.5 million fine to settle charges of arms sales violations, according to the Justice Department. The agreement that was filed in U.S. District Court in New Bern, North Carolina, covers unauthorized sales of satellite phones in Sudan, unauthorized military training provided to foreign governments, including Canada's, illegal possession of automatic weapons, and a whole list of other violations, according to the Justice Department. The sales and training in question took place from 2005 to 2008. Probably under the direction or at least the permission of Dick Cheney, and did not have the authorization of the Treasury and State Departments as required by law. The company is now called Academy LLC. Academy LLC. Ah, I thought they were called Xe. to change it again. They acknowledged in the settlement, quote, responsibility for the conduct in signing what is known as a deferred prosecution agreement with the Justice Department. That must be one of those nunc pro tunks. The agreement means the company will not face prosecution on 17 counts, in addition to all this other stuff, as long as it meets auditing requirements and complies with export restrictions. That was just a couple of years ago that Blackwater, at the time known as XE Services LLC, reached a $42 million settlement with the State Department for similar violations. You know, these hired killers are just like the hired killers in the financial services or the banking industry. Fines? $42 million? $7.5 million? Oh, please, for Christ's sake, we make that much bringing in a shipment of cocaine. Are you serious? We hide that stuff in our black helicopters. Next time you're around us, check out those phony-ass oxygen tanks we carry on our backs. If you open them up, you'll find heroin. Opium. $42 million fine. Chicken feed. Blackwater, Academy, LLC. They still have a large training center in North Carolina. Now, if you remember back in 2004, 17 Iraqi civilians were slaughtered by Blackwater guards when they opened fire in Nisour Square in Baghdad. That was allegedly in retaliation, although no one would admit this. That was in 2007. In 2004, four of the Blackwater hired killers were ambushed and killed, and two of their bodies were hung from a bridge in Fallujah. Remember that? And then do you remember what happened in Fallujah? You don't? I'll do a quick Wikipedia. What else? Oh, there is, speaking of things military, more or less. Veterans for Peace is in Miami this week, convention. And the according to the Miami Herald, the focus of this convention is the atrocities that were committed by the United States in Latin America. Recent stuff. You know, in the 80s, we've been committing atrocities in Latin America for 150 years. But anyway, as the Miami Herald reports it, with pamphlets and peace buttons, bumper stickers, self-published books, the gray-haired veterans and young activists at the Veterans for Peace Convention in Miami were out to educate America on the evils of war. How about educating Americans? Everybody knows war is evil. How about educating Americans on the evils of America where it concerns war? That would be interesting, wouldn't it? The convention began on Wednesday in downtown Miami and is focused on, quote, liberating the Americas, lessons from Latin America and the Caribbean, end quote. The Veterans for Peace president, Leah Bolger, explained that as the U.S. is wrapping up wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, dancing around military engagement with Iran, starting to pick sides in Syria, the Veterans for Peace are trying to draw attention to the military mistakes of the past and the perils of fighting undeclared wars. She denounced the so-called war on drugs and the so-called war on terror as, quote, a huge waste of money and just a premise to intervene militarily all over the world. I'll tell you, some of the most moral, ethical people I've met have been members of Veterans for Peace. I got to participate October last year in Washington at an event when the October 11 movement took over Freedom Plaza and eventually linked up with Occupy Washington, D.C. And the people I met with Veterans for Peace were, I don't know how to say it except ethical, moral, the kind of people that I wish ran the country. And then in January, when, was it January, Kathy? When Bob Kincaid and Pterodactyl and I were in, when was it when I got busted and they got me out?
March.
Again, Veterans for Peace all over the place. So the convention is being held in Miami. This focus on Latin America and the atrocities we've committed there is connected to the founding of Veterans for Peace in 1985, when a group of Vietnam vets organized to oppose the Reagan administration's involvement in the horror and the terror that was going on in Central America and South America. The group has since protested U.S. support of the Nicaraguan Contras, funding of death squads in El Salvador, the training of dictators at the School of the Americas, the training of killers that were sent then or went home to Argentina, Brazil, and Chile. Veterans manning tables at the convention also handed out literature about Bradley Manning, the detainment of Bradley Manning, the man charged with releasing the WikiLeaks information. They also were protesting the 65th anniversary of the bombing, the atomic bombing, the genocide that we committed against the Japanese on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We'll be right back. Coming up after the next break, so phone number is 877-996-2556 if you want to call in and get online. So the Veterans for Peace convention is in Miami this week. With all the ideas circulating down there, according to the Miami Herald, and all the arguments, some participants are still frustrated with the lack of concrete action, the kind of thing that is being called for by people like Kevin Zeese and Chris Hedges. Peter Branson, a 78-year-old retired school teacher from New York City, said he wants Veterans for Peace to talk to the unconverted who still support a bloated Defense Department and ambitious military campaigns. Branson said, quote, "Most progressives want to demonstrate and carry banners and hold vigils, but our job needs to be to educate the American people. We need to organize locally and act nationally." That's very true. And the day may come when finally people will take to the streets in the numbers required to put corporate America on notice, not the politicians, they don't give a goddamn one way or the other, but to put corporate America on notice that the jig is up. We know of their involvement. We know what they're doing. We know that they're moving the company or the country to corporate fascism, and we simply are not going to allow it. I wonder if that'll ever happen. Huh? What do you think? And then there's this. I saw this today. After a year-long investigation, the we don't know, Matt Taibbi hears about this. He's the guy who wrote the piece for Rolling Stone. How long ago was it? Not that long ago, where he referred to Goldman Sachs as a vampire squid attached to the face of America, just sucking the life out of it. I'm kind of paraphrasing it, but it was something like that. Anyway, after a year-long investigation, the Obama Justice Department says it will not bring charges against Goldman Sachs or any of its employees for financial fraud related to the mortgage crisis. In a statement in response to this, Goldman Sachs said, quote, "We are pleased that this matter is behind us." In April 2011, the U.S. Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations published a scathing report on the financial crisis, highlighting Goldman Sachs as one of the primary culprits. Lawmakers accused the firm of breeding a culture of greed and running a conflict-ridden business. Carl Levin, chairman of the Senate Subcommittee on Investigations, published a report. Lawmakers accused the firm of all sorts of illegal or questionable activity. Levin said Goldman executives lied to Congress about the firm's bets against the housing market. That accusation triggered a Justice Department probe of possible perjury. Yeah, where's that? According to Crooks and Liars, the report concluded, the Levin report, that even as security firms flooded the market with securitized mortgages and advised clients to buy them, the firms privately, Goldman privately used words like crap and flying pig to describe the financial instruments. Goldman was accused of failing to inform investors that hedge fund firm Paulson & Company had helped choose underlying securities in the deal and was betting against it. Goldman had agreed to pay a $550 million settlement to end the SEC's civil fraud suit. The company said marketing materials that was to be used against them contained incomplete information. Oh, and also, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has dropped an investigation into Goldman Sachs' role in selling $1.3 billion worth of subprime mortgage securities. I mean, this just goes on and on and on. So, Goldman Sachs, too big to go to jail? Would that be a fair way of putting it? That's some astonishing news, isn't it? This is why nothing short of a massive, massive civil disobedience is going to do anything to stop this slide in the direction that we're going. Nothing. So the Obama Justice Department says, okay, case closed. There's nothing here. Move on. Move along, folks. Nothing here. Trivia when we come back. Do you want to play? 877-996-2556. Get online. Let's go. Do it.
Yeah, the vision is fixed.
podcast trivia on the Malloy program, where you can win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, commercial-free. All you have to do is answer the question correctly. And it's multiple choice, which is the easiest type of question. Are you folks ready? Hi, Carla.
Hello.
You're in Williamsburg, Iowa, listening on Sirius.
Yes, I am.
Well, you all set to play?
Yes, I am.
Okay, here we go. After the recent bloodbath at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, the result of another crazed lunatic, religious lunatic with a gun, Mitt Romney tried to offer condolences to the families of the victims. And in doing so, he once again showed his stupefying ignorance by confusing the words A, prayer with circus, B, gun with marbles, C, temple with bus, or D, shake with Sikh.
I want to say C.
Temple with bus.
Yes.
No, that's wrong, Carla, but thank you. I don't know. Sean is in San Diego listening online. Hey, Sean.
Hi, good evening here, yeah. Mike.
You ready to play?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, here we go. After the recent bloodbath at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, the result of another crazed religious lunatic with a gun, Mitt Romney tried to offer condolences to the families of the victims, and in doing so, he once again showed his stupefying ignorance by confusing which of the following words, A, prayer with circus, B, guns with marbles, C, temple with bus, or D, shake with Sikh.
D, Mike.
D, you're absolutely right. Temple with bus? Oh, my God.
I mean, come on. He did. He was on a bus, and yeah. He was talking about a temple. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, Sean, you have won. Have you tried for this before?
No, I have not.
Okay. Do you know anything about this program?
Yes, I lost you for a few years a while back, but you're one of the few people that's kept me sane over the last 10 or 12 years.
Oh, well, I'm certainly glad to hear that, although I question it deeply. But so you used to listen, what, during the Air America days?
Correct. I've always listened online, but I used to find you on one of the Air America
stations
or whatever.
Yeah, we had a station in San Diego at one time that went to, I think it went to sports talk, because that's much more important in the San Diego market than political talk.
Well, we only got 6 or 7 of those other stations.
I know. None of us could believe it when it happened. Oh, well. All right, Sean, hold on. Kathy's going to get the pertinent information, and thank you very much for playing, and congratulations on winning the one-year podcast subscription. By the way, this hour is being sponsored again by Mark Fishman. Mark at SiriusTaxReform.com. All right, here's his message. The publication of Fishman's Framework for Tax Reform introduces all of us to a tax reform plan that saves the middle class. And it does so by requiring everyone to pay their fair share of the tax burden. And surprisingly, when everyone pays their share, we can lower taxes for individuals and corporations while still raising almost $1 trillion more per year in additional tax revenue. Mark adds, when the additional revenue is combined with the reprioritization of our budget expenditures, we solve Social Security's long-term benefit payout problem, we create and fully fund national health care, and we expand public education to allow all academically qualified students the opportunity to attend college or vocational school free of charge, the way it should be. And along the way, the Fishman Framework for Tax Reform rebuilds our deteriorating infrastructure, creates millions of high-paying jobs, and solves each state's fiscal crisis. To see how all this can be accomplished, you can read the entire proposal free. Just go to SiriusTaxReform.com. And it's all there. Thanks, Mark. Ba-doom, ba-doom, ba-doom. What else we got here? Oh, yeah. I'm not sure where I got this, but this is the kind of stuff you simply can't make up. Mitt Romney had started his six-state bus tour. When was that? A couple of weeks ago. And first, there's the fact that Mitt Romney flies from city to city in a private jet on his bus tour. He gets to an airstrip, and then he gets off the private jet and boards his bus tour bus. He arrives at the scheduled destinations as if he rode the bus from the last scheduled destination. And this ass troll can't even do a bus tour, honestly. Even lies about the mode of transportation on his bus tour. And then he gets scared off the scheduled bus tour by protesters who recognize that Mitt Romney is full of dog dung. From Quakertown, PA, this. The Romney bus tour hit a speed bump today when more than 100 protesters showed up at a gas station where the Republican candidate was scheduled to make a stop. And the candidate's motorcade quickly rerouted to another location just 3 miles away. Romney himself acknowledged the change of venue, his fourth scheduled stop on a five-day, six-state bus tour, while shaking hands with voters outside a Wawa gas station. Romney said he was initially asked about the change and that he said he had moved where he was going to give his little talk. Quote, just to get a good sandwich. He said, quote, I was asked, I think you asked me, why we're at this Wawa instead of the other Wawa. I understand I had a surrogate over there already, so we decided to pick a different sandwich place. Wawa. Wawa, Wawa. 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 He goes on to say, my surrogate is former Governor Rendell, who said we could win Pennsylvania. I'm happy to hear that. So we're happy to be here and see some folks here. Now, despite the way Romney talks about Ed Rendell, the former Democratic governor of Pennsylvania, Rendell is campaigning for Obama. Romney apparently was referring to an interview with Bloomberg News that Rendell gave in which he said the president would not win major sections of the battleground state. So about 50 people greeted Romney at the new Wawa, including a Little League baseball team. And Romney was surprised that they had figured out where to find him. He said, I wondered how you knew we'd be here. Is this guy, there's no point going on with this story, Malloy. This guy is so goddamn insane. I mean, he's just out of his skull. I've never seen a candidate like this. That's because he's a sheep in wolf's clothing. You know, he's really a pussycat. He really is. Mitt Romney is, I wouldn't go so far as to call him a liberal, but he's a center left. Former governor, he believes in almost single payer. I think he would prefer that. He believes that gay folk had a right to get married, like everybody else, and why not? He believes a woman has a right to privacy when she consults with her doctor about certain reproductive issues. That's Mitt Romney, and the right wing leadership knows this, so they're freaking out. That's why the Dump Romney campaign is in full swing. Now, you may want to disagree with me and say Romney's no liberal. About saying he's a liberal, I'm saying he's a, center-right. He was center-right governor. His social political ideas, though, are certainly out of the Republican mainstream. That's why he's come across like such a strident, nasty old man here with his... that first of all, he has that deer in the headlights stare that just sweeps the room. And secondly, he only opens his mouth sometimes to to change feet. And he's absolutely stupid where it concerns history or geography or I mean, it's unbelievable. Like I said, he makes George W. Bush look like a learned man. So Romney is about to get a taste of what a palace coup can feel like. He and his wife believe that they are the reincarnation of Louis XVI and his famous bride. And they're about to get a taste, if not the guillotine, then certainly what it feels like to have a palace coup waged against you. I wonder who the right-wingers are going to try to replace him with. We'll be right back.
I'd say penny for your thoughts, nobody home. But it seems you're out of stock, there's nobody home. When I ask if I can count on you, nobody home. You take off your gloves and shoes, there's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy, as you stare at me vacantly. The lights are out, but I can't see, there's nobody home. Oh, no, there's nobody home. I love your smile, but when you talk, there's nobody home. I love it when you speak your mind, nobody home. It's nice to have some quiet time, there's nobody home. The sign says there's no vacancy, but everything you say to me convinces me most certainly.
Baby was wild.
Before the hour, this hour is sponsored by Mark at SeriousTaxReform.com. His message, the publication of Fisherman's Framework for Tax Reform, heralds the introduction of the tax reform plan that saves our middle class. And it does so by requiring everyone to pay their fair share of the tax burden. When everyone does pay their fair share, we can lower taxes for individuals and corporations while still raising about a trillion dollars more per year in additional tax revenue. With the additional revenue, when it is combined with a prioritization, I love that word, prioritization of our budget expenditures, we solve Social Security's long-term benefit payout problem, we create and fully fund national health care, and we expand public education to allow all academically qualified students the opportunity to attend college or a vocational school free of charge. Along the way, this tax plan rebuilds our deteriorating infrastructure. It creates millions of jobs, high-paying jobs, and solves each state's fiscal crisis. Now, to see how all this can be accomplished, you can read the entire proposal for free at SiriusTaxReform.com. Thank you, Mark. What do we got? Oh, remember, I've been talking recently about the mass killers in this country are merely co-conspirators with people like Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity and Neil Bortz and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these swine. And I inadvertently left out Bill O'Reilly at the Rupert Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. Remember O'Reilly calling for the death of the physician, obstetrician George Tiller? How many times did he refer to Tiller as a baby killer, Tiller the killer, over and over and over again? And O'Reilly, understanding full well that if he kept pushing and probing into this mentally deficient audience that watches him, that eventually he would connect. Eventually, his insistence that George Tiller was a baby killer would resonate with one of his seriously defective audience members, and that person would take up a weapon and, with Bill O'Reilly's voice ringing in his head, go commit murder. Now, I'm fairly certain that O'Reilly is continuing to prime some of the seriously ethically challenged members of his audience, even as we speak. O'Reilly does this, and it's sport. I've said this before. For these right-wingers, this is sport. Some right-wingers like to go kill deer. Some like to kill bighorn sheep. Some like to take a shot at a black bear. These right-wing television radio hosts love to see people die. Now, they'll deny this. They'll get their bloomers in a terrific wad about it. Some of these sicko right-wing websites, I can see the headline, Malloy says, but it's the truth. They know it. We know it. So I just wanted to correct the record that I had left out Bill O'Reilly. And O'Reilly, you can almost directly connect him to the murder, the shooting of George Tiller. Isn't he the one that was shot dead in church? O'Reilly, you miserable, rancid son of a bitch. You really are. He's a borderline schizo himself, but he keeps reaching out there. This is what Beck does. Beck is angry because he can't get an actual notch on his belt that is directly attributable to what he has said. It's all kind of foggy, whereas O'Reilly can claim a direct victim. And they don't stop. Nothing will stop them. The only thing that would stop them would be for corporate America to finally pull back from these sick sons of bitches. I mean, they've made millions off the weakness of the American public. Millions, tens of millions. How much do you need, O'Reilly? How many people have to die? How about you, Beck? How about you, Limbaugh, you obese, sickening bastard? How many people have to take guns into theaters and maybe even a convention center and start shooting because you've gotten inside their heads? And you know what kind of heads you get inside. You know exactly how to do it. Every single one of you right-wingers. So, O'Reilly, didn't mean to offend you by leaving your name off the list of right-wing media people who are directly responsible for so much of the slaughter going on. I think Beck could probably claim Gerald Loeffner, but the killer of George Tiller belongs to O'Reilly. No question about that. We have a break coming rather rapidly. We'll be back. And take some phone calls. So stick around if you feel the urge. back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Molloy program. Lee in San Diego sent me a quick email here and a link. It's just the NBC Nightly News. You already know about it. We just talked about it. But Lee writes, Mike, Obama delivers through his Justice Department and the SEC just in time for current campaign contributions. He's talking about no charges will be filed against Goldman Sachs or anyone who works there. Everything they did was perfectly legal. Let me see a show of hands out there. Now, how many of you still think I'm crazy because I don't endorse in my little corner of the universe Barack Obama? And I refer to him as George Bush Light. I see some hands. Ooh, a lot of you. Okay. Well, I don't know what else you would call him. No charges against the Vampire Squid Company. Amazing. Jim is in Las Vegas, listening on Sirius. Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm fantastic, but as usual, you're right on point. And it's scary. It's like I was hoping there'd be a new reality with Obama, but I don't see it happening.
Everybody. Yeah, the problem, Jim, is you and I and a lot of people. It's not that we were fooled by Obama. It was that we fooled ourselves. We were so desperate to see some kind of leadership in this country other than the fascist right, other than this vampire Dick Cheney. So when Obama pops up, a lot of us Caucasians displayed our racism, and I know a lot of you are going to disagree with me on this, but I frankly don't give a damn. We displayed our racism in this way. Ah, Barack Obama. Oh, he's a black man. Oh, well, he's going to be a lot more liberal than a white man. Oh, well, he's got a black parent and a white parent. Oh, well, that'll make him even more liberal. Okay. Now, that is a classic example of racism, and most progressives or liberals would just be shocked, I tell you, to think that that is a racist line of thinking. But it is. You know, it is a racist line of thinking. So Obama was getting it from the left and the right, and the truth about Obama, I think, is that he's a corporatist. He's not a liberal. He is certainly not a progressive by the only definition of that term that I know, a current definition. I'm not talking about the progressives from the Midwest. Back in the day, just the current definition of progressive, current definition of a liberal. This is not Barack Obama. He is a corporatist. He is what he is. And I don't think he ever made any, well, he did make some promises that were flat out lies, or else he got into the Oval Office and realized that there was not a damn thing he could do. But anyway, the problem, Jim, I think, is with people like you and me. We're the ones that voted him into office, and now there's a good chance that the rabid right in this country, if they don't commit massive mutual suicide, they will probably get Romney or whoever they pick in place of Romney to replace him. We're on the cusp of something really ugly in this country. There's no question about it. Jim, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. Mark Taylor Canfield is in Seattle. Hello, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for keeping it lit.
Sure. You too.
I really want to talk to you about how the folks in Iceland have been putting the banksters in jail. But before I mention that, I wanted to respond to something you said just before the break.
Okay.
Just wanted to let you know that our Mr. Bill O'Reilly, it was reported, 2 days ago, is being paid $15 million a year.
Really? Yeah.
That's his salary, is $15 million. That was widely reported 2 days ago.
And he deserves every penny of it.
Obviously, yeah. if you get paid to spread a false propaganda, I guess, you know, you do your job and people reward you, you know, that's the way it works.
That's the way it works in this country. This is what corporate America wants. And anybody who doesn't believe that, take a look at Goldman Sachs. Take a look at Jamie Dimon. Jamie Dimon and some of Eric Holder's underlings must be having a grand old time tonight toasting each other for the scam that both of them pulled on the American public. Jamie Dimon's Goldman Sachs, he's with Goldman Sachs, right? Yeah. His machinations, his destruction of the economy, and the Obama Justice Department, which is probably not too much different from the Bush Justice Department in terms of how they do not enforce the law. Everybody's happy. The corporatists in government won out. The capitalists in corporate America won out. The poor, unlucky sons of bitches in the American middle class who have lost everything. Not just their homes, but their jobs, their savings, their 401ks, their college funds. They have lost everything. They don't count. So, yeah, congratulations to Obama and Holder and Diamond and Goldman Sachs and all the predators who, and again, just in time for heavy campaign contributions that are going to be needed here in the final 100-yard sprint.
Just to be clear, Jamie Dimon is actually the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase.
Okay, thank you.
Not that I want to give Goldman Sachs a break either, but people really need to remember that the top two contributors for Obama's campaign are employees from those two corporate institutions.
Right, exactly.
Follow the money. I wanted to let people know that in Iceland, they've actually been able to replace their parliament. This is post-2008. This is how they dealt with it. They've got banksters on trial. One of them's already been sentenced. They were able to force their National Banking Commission to resign. They mm-hmm. replaced most of their parliament. They got a new constitution that they're voting on in October. And it was all done because people refused to leave the parliament and began banging on pots and pans all hours of the day, driving them crazy mm-hmm. until they finally relented. So I want to, you know, the reason I know that is because there's an activist that I got to interview. His name is Order Tomlinson. And this is one of those amazing moments in history where he was sort of the trigger point for a whole revolution in his country, just one person who stood up and said no.
Right.
And so it's a great story. You know, I want people in the United States to know, too, that the Occupy Wall Street one-year anniversary is coming up on September 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And regardless of the current boycott in the corporate media, the truth is that there are uprisings taking place as we speak all over the world where people are opposing these so-called austerity measures that are being forced on them basically by the banksters and their puppets, the politicians. But everywhere you look, they've been, you know, making it harder for poor folks to get by, and now they're dismantling the middle class. But all around the world, and, you know, the revolutions in Egypt and Tunisia are continuing because there was, of course, a backlash against it. But these uprisings are continuing, and I think that people are coming to realize slowly that the entire global agenda is just not working. At some point, it's not even going to work for the 1%. At this point, you know, they're trying to take all they can get. But the cat is sort of out of the bag, so to speak, and with all these scandals surrounding Jamie Dimon, who, by the way, is also the head of the Federal Reserve in New York City, which is the most powerful Federal Reserve bank in the country. I think that's sort of a conflict of interest if you really look into the economics behind that. Where
I didn't realize Dimon had that dual role. I should know that.
If he loses money with J.P. Morgan, he can, you know, there's been a lot of printing money, no accountability, and nobody seems to know where it's going. Well, if you're the head of the Federal Reserve and you can just print money at will, hey, why not cover your debt?
Yeah, why not? Why not?
I'm just saying, as they say.
Sure, why not? Just put it in the company. Hey, I got to leave it there, Mark. Thank you. Mark Taylor Canfield with Occupy Seattle. We'll be right back. Bad to the bone. I broke 1,000 hearts before I met you. I'll break 1,000 more, baby. Bad to the past the hour.
I'd welcome the chance to meet my maker and fly into
one of our sponsors tonight, Mark Fishman. I want to give his message again. This is interesting. The publication of Fishman's Framework for Tax Reform is being announced. It heralds the introduction of the tax reform plan that saves our middle class. Mark's message goes on. It does so by requiring everyone to pay their fair share of the tax burden. When everyone pays their share, we can lower taxes for individuals and corporations while still raising almost $1 trillion more per year in additional tax revenue. And when the additional revenue is combined with the reprioritization of our budget expenditures, we solve Social Security's long-term benefits payout problem. We create and fully fund national health care and expand public education to allow all academically qualified students the opportunity to attend college or vocational school free of charge. And in addition, along the way here, it rebuilds our deteriorating infrastructure and in so doing creates millions of high-paying jobs and solves each state's fiscal crisis. Now, I know nobody believes in Santa Claus. Well, okay, some do. To see how this has been accomplished, you can read the entire proposal for free. It's at SiriusTaxReform.com. Check it out. SiriusTaxReform.com. And yeah, my bad. It's Lloyd Blankfein, who is the CEO of Goldman Sachs. And Blankfein is primarily a contributor to Democratic candidates. He's also, I believe, a strong advocate. I know he's an advocate. I'm adding the adjective. Strong advocate for marriage equality in this country. you can get away with a lot of mischief, can't you, when you align yourself politically with what is considered to be the right thing to do. But the fact remains that Goldman Sachs, as an investment banking house, a mortgage packager, and so on and so forth, that Goldman Sachs is probably responsible for more heartbreak, more busted dreams, more anguish among American working class and middle class families than could be offset by his support of marriage equality. You understand what I'm saying? And Blankfein should know better, you would think. I mean, he comes from a very humble background. He grew up in New York in public housing. His parents both had just working class jobs. And Wikipedia says he was a vendor kid at, Yankee Stadium or someplace, you know, walking through the crowd selling hot dogs or whatever. You'd think he would have more respect for his roots and the people who did not wind up as CEO of Goldman Sachs, the people who are not paid $50, $60, $70 million a year to be modern day privateer, pirate, thief, a liar, sneak. The damage that is done when you have the wholesale destruction of people's lives is incalculable. I mean, come on. Isn't this the guy that spent $4, $5, $6 million or something for his daughter's bat mitzvah or wedding or something? Wasn't it? Don't I remember something that the Blankfein was, he just went nuts on some event for one of his kids. Well, if you have it, spend it, right? But it depends on how you got it. I don't know. Really doesn't matter. Flo is in Minneapolis listening on KTNF. Hello, Flo.
Hi, Malloy. I guess you could refer to me as a brash old broad with a set of brass ones.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
I would like to share with you my favorite Jefferson quote.
Jefferson quote, okay.
Mm-hmm. The day will come when the mystical generation of Jesus in the womb of a virgin by a supreme being as his father will be classed with the fable of the generation of Minerva in the brain of Jupiter.
Okay, what does that mean? All right, now hold on a second, Flo. I got to put you on hold because we have a break here at the bottom of the hour. So if you'll stay right there, and when you come back, or when we come back, you're not going anywhere. Well, essentially, neither are we. When we start talking to each other again, you can tell me what that means. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I need some company. You got that mystery. Lord, I need a plan. All I got is this compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as the bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand.
Right now, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, this is the Malloy program. We're talking with Flo in Minneapolis. All right, explain that Jefferson quote to us.
Jefferson was a classical scholar,
mm-hmm.
and he was referring to, creation myths like the Greek mythology, where supposedly Minerva came out of the brain of Jupiter, and Eve was created out of a rib from Adam, and Jesus was mystically implanted in Mary's womb by God, and lumping them all much together as absurd creation.
Mm-hmm. You're familiar with the Jeffersonian Bible, the one that he and I think it was Jefferson who removed all references to Christianity or what could be interpreted as Christianity. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
Is that called the Jeffersonian Bible or the Jefferson Bible or something like that?
Yeah, it's been referred to that way, yeah.
So how many of the other framers, Flo, in your mind, were... or from your reading, how many were able to see that the Christian mythology was no different from Greek or Roman or Celtic or African or Chinese mythology? How many other of the framers were able to figure that out?
Well, clearly, Thomas Paine was mm-hmm. of that frame of mind. Franklin was.
So when you hear evangelical Christians referring to getting the country back to what the framers wanted, that they wanted a Christian nation, that the Constitution has many references to...
They wanted nothing like a Christian nation.
Right. So when you hear these evangelicals saying just the opposite, do you kind of get the same gut reaction I do? You'd like to take their pants down and smack their butts? You know, just give them a real bad case of red ass.
Oh, whap them upside the head. unbelievable. I mean, the reason that the Jefferson insisted that we wouldn't have a constitution until and unless a Bill of Rights was ratified as an attachment, and the firstness of the First Amendment is the Establishment Clause.
Right.
Freedom from religion.
Yes, indeed.
Which is the guarantor of the free exercise of it.
There you go.
If you don't have freedom from it, you can't have free exercise of it.
Amen.
And so that was Jefferson's frame of mind. And mine as well.
It sounds like it, Flo.
And that's why I'm a deeply disappointed, opted out member of the Obama kitchen cabinet.
Mm.
They wanted me to, join again and be part of the team, and
right.
I said no. I stand behind you, sir, but it's not to give your back a pat. It's to deliver a swift kick in the ass. And if, like a good Christian, you wish to turn the other cheek, make it a nether cheek, because you have another kick coming.
Flo, you crack me up. I swear to God, if you run for elective office someplace that where I can vote, I will probably.
Oh, I couldn't begin to. I'm too plain speaking.
Yeah.
I don't tell people what I think they want to hear,
yeah.
What's appropriate to this group at this time in this location, and then change it. I say what I mean, and I say so plainly, bluntly, and tact is not one of my virtues. Before we got even into a campaign, I would have alienated every constituency out there with one thing or another.
I hear you. Wasn't it Harry Truman that said, people say I give them hell? I don't give them hell. I tell them
the truth, and they think it's hell.
They think it's hell.
Exactly.
Flo, I got to move on. I hope you're going to call again, all right?
You bet. Love you, Mike.
Thank you so much.
And my regards to the future producer, and look out on your side of the microphone, little Molly.
Yep.
Is really something special.
She is. She's a treat. She certainly is. Thanks, Flo.
You bet.
All right.
Bye.
Take care. Take care. Now, see, we can laugh because Flo has a natural comedic delivery. Reminds me a bit of Marge, but truth be told, wouldn't it be a lot easier if when you hear somebody like Flo talk, and then you hear the weasel words that come out of these politicians and these religious leaders, and then you go back and listen to Flo again, then you go listen to the weasel words, and you just stop and you think, what in the hell happened to make these religious leaders and politicians get so far from reality? Flo is reality. Flo also reminds me, I don't know why, but some of the attitudes and possibly writings of Mark Twain. Twain was the same way, just like Flo. Right? Now, I've suggested to this audience a long time ago to read some of the less well-known works of Twain. It wasn't all Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. There are essays and pieces that he wrote that are astonishing. Letters to the Earth, Letters from the Earth, Eve's Diary, Adam's Diary, Methuselah's Diary. The attack, and that's all it can be described of, but using his humor, Twain's humor, which was so out of sync with his time. He was so far ahead of what was going on in the United States back then. But to use his humor to go after the insanity of religion. He had a lot of tragedy in his life. And towards the end of his life, when he was writing from the war in the Philippines, the Spanish-American War, and he watched the atrocities committed by American troops against Filipinos, it just about destroyed him. He wrote something there called The Damned Human Race. And there's so much Twain that I go back and read every once in a while. And if you haven't read it, let me strongly suggest that you give it a shot, because, like I say, Twain was the most authentic of American writers, I think. And I think after Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer, either one or both, the genre of American novels was changed forever. But his political writing and his anti-religious stance are amazing. So if you get a chance, seriously, read Letters from the Earth, Letters to the Earth, Eve's Diary. Adam's Diary is particularly funny. The Damned Human Race is not funny. And some of his dispatches from our involvement in the Philippines during the Spanish-American War are some of the most powerful anti-war writings I've ever read. Directly to the point of the atrocities that he witnessed. He caused a lot of hell back here in the States. I mean, this is around, what, 1903, 1902, 1904, somewhere around in there. And America was just beginning its 100 plus years of global hegemony and attacking countries and murdering millions of people. And Twain was right there to see the beginnings of that. And if he would have been listened to, if his words would have been taken to heart, I just sometimes wonder what this country would be like now. In Victoria, British Columbia. Hey, Larry.
Hi, Mike. Letter from the Earth is free online at positiveatheism.org.
Is it? Positiveatheism.org.
Yeah.
All right.
I wanted to ask you, does that mean you're not endorsing Obama? Does that mean you're endorsing the Green or the Justice candidate, the Justice Party?
You know, I haven't decided yet. I'm leaning toward the Green candidate. But because I think the system here has been so corrupted, and so, and rendered so ineffective, that I'm not sure what I'm going to do. I can't, but I can't in good conscience endorse the system anymore, because the system, I don't care who the candidate is. If Moses or Jesus or Muhammad or somebody somehow got on a ballot someplace, it would only be because corporate or capitalist America had decided that this candidate is manipulable. And this candidate, if elected, and let's start pumping millions and tens of millions of dollars into him, this candidate will do exactly what we say. So because there is no choice, there's no choice to do not what they say. So because I feel, and I mean this, I feel that the system has become so corrupt, the question I ask myself when I think about voting is, why am I participating then in a system that is totally corrupted? And I don't have a ready answer other than this. If I do participate in that system, I am either endorsing corruption or I am deluding myself. Now, there's no third way there for me. I don't know about you or him or her or that group over there. I'm talking about me. I mean, it's been a long time coming, but I finally have arrived at that position. I have voted for the lesser of two evils so many times, I'm sick of it. I have voted for candidates nationally and locally that I honestly believed were going to make efforts to restore some kind of sanity, either in the county I live in or the state or the nation or our global relations with people. And I have yet to find any kind of satisfaction from my votes. I don't know what to do. I can't be honest with the people who listen to this program and say, oh yeah, get out there and vote for Obama, because if you don't and Romney wins, it's the end of the world. I mean, I can't do that. People can't figure that out or something else out or come to their own decisions or blah, blah, blah. Then it's what? Too bad? I don't know what to say.
I know how you feel. In our country, in the 50s, the birth of the anti-corporate party took place, the NDP.
Yeah.
I'm a dual citizen myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it arose out of the struggle in the 30s to build unions.
Mm-hmm.
With the anarchists, the socialists, the communists, all involved.
Mm-hmm.
And enough consciousness existed at that time to demand that we have some representation that takes no corporate money. Canada,
mm-hmm.
starting in the 50s. So that process hasn't yet been initiated in the States. And if we get fascists in office, Obama's close, he's tilting that way, but Romney, I think, is much more content, or the fascist element is much more content with the Republicans, obviously, in office at all levels, including Supreme Court appointments, if we mm-hmm. get fascists in office.
But they're already there.
They are, of course they are, but there will be more. And
well,
there will be no ability to organize.
Right, but as long as this system in the States exists the way it exists, then there, I mean, you know, we can have a billion fundraisers for a progressive candidate. It's still not going to work. I mean, the system itself, this is the point I'm trying to make. The system itself has become so corrupt. I don't care how politically pure a candidate would be. First of all, for that candidate to even get on a ballot in this system is damn near impossible. To get on the ballot in 50 states is damn near impossible. To get any kind of funding is damn near impossible. Now, I'm of a certain age where I've been working my ass off, it feels like, for liberal or progressive causes for a good 40 years. And, you know, I'm tired. I really, really am tired. I don't have the time any longer to invest I mean that literally. You know, I do not have, I don't have any diseases I know of, but I don't have the time left to stick 30 years into something. And I don't think that people who do have 30 years available are willing to dedicate that time to try to reform a system that cannot be reformed. This is why I've come to the conclusion, as and this is from reading and trying to educate myself politically, that the system no longer is worth the powder to blow it to hell. It must be removed and replaced. So voting for a Green Party candidate, while it may be a noble thing to do, will do nothing, ultimately. Nothing. The system has to be removed and replaced. And, I mean, I've come to that conclusion, Larry, not from sitting around staring at the walls and going, well, I'm not happy. You know, it comes from a long time of trying to understand this. Larry, I've got to leave it there. I'm glad you called. I hope you call again. Thank you. That's it for this week. I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are. Say goodnight, Kathy.
Goodnight, Kathy.